Welcome. The peace revolution now continues.
There is a peaceful solution called the peace revolution. Now let's take back America. There's a war and we're in it. I know we can win it. So let's take back America.
Welcome to the Peace Revolution Podcast. I am your host and navigator, Richard Grove, and this is where we step out of the confusion, fear, and anxiety of life to relax into some knowledge, understanding, and wisdom. You're listening to Podomatic's number one rated podcast for higher education. Peace Revolution and all the media we create here at Tragedy and Hope is presented without corporate sponsorship and is provided commercial free and free to the public. Thanks to the generosity of the subscribers of the Tragedy and Hope online community and the hard work of the media hosts at tragedyandhope.com. If you enjoy this podcast and find it rewarding, please share it with anyone that you think might be interested. I also encourage you to check the episode notes, references, and links for this and all episodes we publish at peacerevolution.org. I also invite you to click the invitation link in the episode notes and participate in the Tragedy and Hope online community, wherein you can sharpen your intellectual self-defense skills while enjoying a fear-free zone of learning in which to practice these newfound arts. What you're about to hear in the form of this episode is a lecture, which was intended to be relayed to an audience in about an hour. When I was presented with the opportunity to help Jan Ervin prepare his lecture in Philadelphia, City of Brotherly Love, and host to the Free Your Mind conference this upcoming weekend, I offered to share some of the research I'd been condensing over past weeks for the second episode of What You've Been Missing, which addresses the topic of the history of corruption in public education. Since it's such a daunting topic to present at all, let alone in a two-hour episode of our video series, I thought that by helping Jan write his speech, there'd be an opportunity for me to sharpen my skills by focusing on teaching the audience just one aspect, which unlocks the rest of the history of corruption in public education. I thought it would be challenging to do it in a way such that it enables everyone not only to grasp the concept I'm attempting to articulate, but it also facilitates their ability to learn to grasp these concepts far better than I can at this point, by providing the coordinates whereby we can all likewise study the information to which I'm referring, and thereby providing everyone with the ability to do likewise and pay it forward to others. This is the only way that humanity is going to be saved. And if there is a God, that mysterious energy works through us, not independent of us. So it's our responsibility to learn to save ourselves and thereby pass the ultimate test in this classroom of the universe. That being said, it is the fact that I've been inspired by so many brilliant minds that if you can hear me throughout today's lecture, it's only because I'm whispering through a microphone while standing on the shoulders of giants. If it were not for the other human beings who've inspired me to be more human and thus more humane in my thinking and actions, I would probably be off chasing the almighty dollar instead of pursuing and sharing some humble wisdom. If it were not for learned students of this world like Mark Passio, there would not be a Free Your Mind conference this weekend, nor attendees to be addressed. If Jan had not encouraged me to create the Project Constellation lecture in 2006, there would be no podcasts for the past 5 years leading us up to this point of realization. If it weren't for audience members like Gino Denning stepping up and initiating communication, there would be much less ability on my part to actually articulate my thoughts, let alone ensure that those thoughts made any logical sense to you. And if it were not for independent filmmakers like Paul Verge, there'd be no such concept as a video series known as What You've Been Missing. And the 80,000 people who viewed the first episode might have been left to watch Dancing with the Stars or some such drivel. My point is that without friends and colleagues, this lecture would not have had a reason to be composed, and thus, we, here and now and in the future, would still be very much left in the dark, unable to construe the world around us and to see it with focus and clarity. I recorded this lecture in MP3 form so that Jan could listen to it as he read the transcript during his flight and prepare for his lecture. And therein, re-listening to it, I realized that it'd be likewise empowering to share this information with you, and not just the attendees of the Free Your Mind Conference, as I feel that it's the most intelligent and meaningful message that can be conveyed to anyone at this time. And the lecture is crafted to illustrate that which we all need to realize in order to free our minds. To that end, there's a few notes to the lecture I'd like to mention up front, as I realize in listening to it that it loses just a bit of the message in translation. Being that this is a PowerPoint presentation with graphics, and what you're hearing is my audio version. If you don't mind the prefacing for purposes of correction before I confuse you in the lecture with the shortcomings of my articulation therein, I'll add a few comments to aid your discovery. Firstly, when I mention Claude Shannon as a polymath, this is not a judgment saying he's good or bad. Rather, it's an observation of his comprehensive intellect. Secondly, the Shannon diagrams are missing from the audio, but Google Images has them if you search. Thirdly, Ram is a Hindu word for God, and RAM, same spelling, is a type of computer memory. I thought that this concept of God and memory was important enough to clarify now, as opposed to your being confused at the end of the lecture. Now, if I had more time, I would have included several examples of fallacies, but this being an important topic which is somewhat complex, that would most likely be included in hour two, if there was one. In the meanwhile, a simple search on the internet for fallacy will yield as much information as you can handle, and if you want less information with more potency, visit triviumeducation.com. Lastly, I'd like to mention that this is a summary introduction to this concept in an attempt to communicate what I feel is the most rewarding lesson which can be learned. So please don't see it as a final result, but rather a first step in a logical, reasonable, and rational direction. If we all learn to take these steps independently, wherein we determine our own choice, the status quo will reflect this. In order for the status quo to no longer be diametrically opposed to the needs of human beings for survival, we must all learn to free our own minds of the external control wielded by those who seek to prey on our naivete. I wrote this lecture on April 5th, 2011, which was the 8th anniversary of the day that Lisa and I created 8th Estate Media and Research, which at the time was our way of taking action upon the realization that the fourth estate had failed us all, and that instead of complaining, we should contribute and invest our energy into a worthwhile endeavor. That is how we're here right now. Without 8th Estate Media, there would have been no 9/11 Synchronicity podcast, which made Tragedy and Hope and Peace Revolution possible. And without these projects, there wouldn't be a community with 1,000 people from all over the world working together to think our way forward out of the problems and into understanding the solutions which surround us. Without all of the actions which helped us survive over the past years, there wouldn't be hundreds of hours of educational media which we produced, and it wouldn't be out there for free, enabling countless people to remedy their own situations of their own free will. Without other artists and activists like James Corbett, Maria Heller, and James Evan Pilato, I might not have been inspired to continue producing my art with such consistency and evolution as I learned to integrate what I've learned into the media I create. It's only through working in concert with others that our concert of will can eventually manifest into reality. It's truly a beautiful thing, and that's why, to celebrate this anniversary, I spent all day trying to do my best to help a friend impart a much-needed message of wisdom to an audience seeking to free their minds. A lecture which reflects not his opinion or mine, but a message which reflects an example of what human beings can do and the future that we can all create through observing, thinking, and taking constructive and meaningful action. A message which benefits all who can comprehend its contents. This lecture is dedicated to the subscribers of the Tragedy and Hope online community and everyone else who has the ability to hear my words, grasp my meaning, and pay it forward to others. Without our cross-pollination of ideas, the convection current of causality created by our actions, and the inspiration which generated this lecture, such wisdom could never have been condensed into such succinct form. I am truly grateful to all those who helped us progress to this point of awareness, and those who elevated our ability to communicate and share this information with all who seek clarity in their world and a focus which allows them to make the most of their potential here in it. The keys to unlocking your own mind are the most powerful and precious gift that we can give. With infinite inventory, there is no shortage of it, all of which is produced by our most precious natural resource, our ability to learn. This is episode 23, How to Free Your Mind, The Occulted Keys of Wisdom. Thank you for your support, and thank you for tuning in and not dropping out. Part 1. Why are we here? Literacy is a form of slavery until a systematic form of critical thinking is practiced by the reader. We'll be discussing the relevance of this observation for the remainder of this lesson, and if you don't currently have a systematic form of critical thinking, don't be alarmed, as you'll be provided with your own lock-picking set in the form of the Lost Tools of Learning, and from there, you can unlock your own potential at your own pace. If you want to free your mind, you first have to come to understand the process by which words were used to program and control your mind in the first place. Thereby, you will have the ability to rewrite the programming in your own image. That's on an individual level, but what about humanity as a whole? The status quo, or our existing state of affairs, amounts to this. Human actions are in conflict with human needs for survival. The perfect storm of irrationality that we're all experiencing has three major components which create its devastating effect. The first concept is that of censorship or secrecy, which is the act of occulting or hiding information. The second is the corruption of education, which conveniently leaves you intellectually self-defenseless. The third concept is the absence of compassionate communication, which prevents constructive action from taking place. Ending secrecy and revealing the truth does not automatically give people the critical thinking skills and nonviolent communication skills they need. Providing intellectual self-defense does not automatically prevent censorship, nor does it teach one how to communicate. Learning how to communicate does not end secrecy, nor does it provide critical thinking. So in order to free our minds, we must take these three steps and repeat these three steps over and over. Let's begin by defining 13 simple concepts so that we can all start on the same page. The first being the axiom of non-aggression. This is an ethical stance which asserts that aggression is inherently illegitimate. Aggression is defined as the initiation of physical force against persons or property, the threat of such, or fraud upon persons or their property. In contrast to pacifism, the non-aggression principle does not preclude violent self-defense. The principle is a deontological or rule-based ethical stance. Number 2, education, which means to bring out, to extract, to produce from a state of occultation. According to Johnson's Dictionary in 1854, education is derived from the Latin verb educo, to lead or draw out. The third term is occult, from the Latin verb occulto, to hide or keep secret. Number 4, polymath. A polymath, coming from the Greek, meaning having learned much, is a person whose expertise spans a significant number of different subject areas. Number 5, autonomy. Autonomy, coming from the ancient Greek autonomos, from auto, self, plus nomos, law, one who gives oneself their own law. It's a concept found in moral, political, and bioethical philosophy, and within these contexts, it refers to the capacity of a rational individual to make an informed, uncoerced decision. Number 6, government is derived from the Latin word gubernare, a verb meaning to control, which is combined with the word mente, a Latin noun meaning mind. Government literally means to control the mind. Number 7, cybernetics. The term cybernetics stems from the Greek kybernetes, which means steersman, governor, pilot, or rudder, the same root as government. Cybernetics is a broad field of study which includes equations to control human behavior through the use of language. In other words, if the purpose of government is to control the mind, Cybernetics would be the instruction manual on how to control your mind. This will mean a lot more when we get to Norbert Wiener in a few minutes. Number 8, conspiracy, from the Latin verb conspire, meaning to conspire. It is the act of occulting information in order to prey on those who have been denied access to the same set of useful information. See also cabal. One might note that the term conspiracy theory did not appear in the Oxford English Dictionary until 1997, 1 year after the release of the film by the same name. Number 9. Terrorism. Government by force or coercion, according to the Oxford English Dictionary. 10. Nescient. A lack of awareness or knowledge as a consequence of never having had the choice or opportunity to be exposed to it. Had they been exposed to awareness or knowledge, it would have been integrated into their thoughts and actions had they only been given the opportunity. Contrasting number 10 with number 11, which is ignorant, it's someone who is aware of the concept or knowledge and yet does not integrate this information and are thus resistant to their own learning by their own choice, choosing not to learn. See also denial. Number 12, liber. The Latin word for book is also the same Latin root word used to articulate the idea of freedom, and thus the root word of liberty. Reading books provides a road to cognitive liberty. Number 13, compassionate communication. This is a process of observing without judgment, where we process our feelings and identify mutual needs, whereby we can then communicate in order to meet the needs of all parties, voluntarily, and without the use of force or fraud. So if the word government literally means to control the mind, wouldn't learning how to control your own mind negate the opportunity for external government to occur? You see, it's the simple act of asking questions which illustrates the Achilles heel of the control system. You can condition animals, but animals can't ask questions. And when humans ask questions, they can learn their way out of control systems and achieve their own freedom. Government will continue to exist until it is no longer necessary. The absence of government is anarchy, not autonomy. Absence of someone else controlling your mind does not automagically give you critical thinking. So it's more logical, reasonable, and rational to learn how to learn anything for ourselves and thereby become autonomous, whereby external mind control, or government, is no longer necessary. Government, to control the mind, is a form of aggression when it is against your consent. When government occult information, for example with top secrecy, it is a form of aggression as it denies you the opportunity to make informed choices in your life. If 16 million documents were made top secret by our so-called government last year, how could we as citizens possibly expect to be informed as to what reality actually is? When secret societies occult or hide information and use oaths as a method of ensuring that the secrets stay secret, they generate a power differential. If they prevent others from likewise accessing this useful information, does the superclass which runs the world have superpowers? They do. Their superpower is to have access to a systematic method to attain certainty, while at the same time denying you the access to the same liberating tools. The purpose of this lesson is to transfer the superpowers of the non-elected rulers to you, whereby you can inspect, validate, and if you so choose, install your own superpowers of learning. And as a consequence, if you so choose, you can likewise empower others with the opportunity to catalyze their own learning potential. It's truly the gift that keeps on giving until someone decided to keep it a secret and assume power to control the rest of our lives without our consent. Without access to the occulted information and the intellectual toolkit to allow you to take actions with certainty, it is a rigged game ensuring consistency, satisfaction, and order for those who occult information and uncertainty, fear, confusion and chaos for those without access to the information and these tools of learning. As a result, without learning to outgrow our current situation, many of us react emotionally and cannot outthink our reactions, devolving our state of response ability to that of fight or flight, powered by adrenaline. Emotions are not a valid method of attaining knowledge, and we tend to panic instead of responding to the unknown with interest and observation, logical thought, and informed action to make it known. This emotional reaction of fear in the presence of the unknown is the essence of how we, as human beings, are being controlled by other human beings who are using words. Who is doing this to us? The short answer, polymaths who possess rationality without emotion. Throughout history, many groups have espoused this obsession to control the lives of others, whether it's the Autonists or the eugenicists or the ego worshippers, because they all support controlling you vis-a-vis the censorship and manipulation of information, better known as the concept of the scientific dictatorship. Some examples illustrating the idea of the scientific dictatorship would be the following members of the 20th century intelligentsia. Edward Bernays, quote, "The conscious and intelligent manipulation of the organized habits and opinions of the masses is an important element in democratic society. Those who manipulate this unseen mechanism of society constitute an invisible government, which is the true ruling power of our country. We are governed, our minds are molded, our tastes formed, our ideas suggested, largely by men we have never heard of. This is the logical result of the way in which our democratic society is organized. Vast numbers of human beings must cooperate in this manner if they are to live together as a smoothly functioning society. In almost every act of our daily lives, whether the sphere of politics or business, in our social conduct or ethical thinking, we are dominated by the relatively small number of persons who understand the mental processes and social patterns of the masses. It is they who pull the wires which control the public mind." End quote. Edward Bernays, Propaganda, 1928. Number 2, Walter Lippmann. Quote, "We have learned to call this propaganda. A group of men who can prevent independent access to the event can arrange the news to suit their purpose. In order to conduct a propaganda campaign, there must be some barrier between the public and the event. Access to the real environment must be limited before anyone can create a pseudo-environment he thinks wise or desirable." End quote. Walter Lippmann, Public Opinion, 1922. Number 3. B.F. Skinner, inventor of operant conditioning, quote, "Give me a child, and I'll shape him into anything." End quote. Number 4. Bertrand Russell, quote, "Education should aim at destroying free will so that after pupils have left school, they shall be incapable throughout the rest of their lives of thinking or acting otherwise than as their schoolmasters would have wished." End quote. Page 50, The Intended Result of Education, in Russell's book, The Impact of Science on Society, published in 1951. Number 5. Norbert Wiener, author of Cybernetics and Human Use of Human Beings. Wiener's work focuses on equations on how to control human behavior and illustrates how to corrupt our natural communication and feedback or learning processes, whereby game theory is used to control the masses. Quote, "As I've already hinted, one of the directions of work which the realm of ideas of the Macy meetings has suggested concerns the importance of the notion and the technique of communication in the social system. It is certainly true that the social system is like an organization and like the individual, that it is bound together by a system of communication and that it has dynamics in which circular processes of a feedback nature play an important part. This is true both in the general fields of anthropology and sociology, and more specific in the field of economics. And the very important work, which we have already mentioned, of von Neumann and Morgenstern on the theory of games, enters into this range of ideas. On this basis, Drs. Gregory Bateson and Margaret Mead have urged me, in view of the intensely pressing nature of the sociological and economic problems of the present age of confusion, to devote a large part of my energies to the discussion of this side of cybernetics. End quote. And if you are unfamiliar with what this quote means, click the link to the Macy conferences on Wikipedia and learn your way forward after this lesson. This is the whole key. They studied how to control us in public. It's history. We all need to learn this. Last but not least, number 6, Aldous Huxley. Quote, "A really efficient totalitarian state would be one in which the all-powerful executive of political bosses and their army of managers control a population of slaves who do not have to be coerced because they love their servitude. To make them love it is the task assigned in present-day totalitarian states to ministries of propaganda, newspaper editors, and school teachers. The greatest triumphs of propaganda have been accomplished not by doing something, but by refraining from doing. Great is truth, but still greater, from a practical point of view, is silence about truth." End quote. Aldous Huxley, The Ultimate Revolution, March 20th, 1962, a lecture he gave at Berkeley. Part 2. The Secret of Secret Societies. There are many artifacts which illustrate that the craft of masonry is much older than its public eruption in Great Britain during the 1700s. One such document is the Wood Manuscript, circa 1610, which contains 32 pages and therein begins by proclaiming that masonry has always been associated with grammar, rhetoric, logic, arithmetic, geometry, music, and astronomy. This is an unmistakable reference to the seven liberal or liberating arts, which are composed of the trivium, grammar, logic, and rhetoric, and the quadrivium, arithmetic, geometry, music, and astronomy. These are ancient subjects lost to the Christian world during the Dark Ages and preserved in the Middle East by Arab scholars until the Crusades. Another curious artifact is found as the conclusion to Albert Pike's magnum opus, Morals and Dogma, where on page 861 he proclaims that the royal secret of the Sublime Prince is found in the understanding of the Pythagorean 5-3-4 right-angle triangle. The five representing the five senses, which we use to observe. The three representing the trivium, grammar, logic, and rhetoric, which we use to process information, and the four representing the quadrivium, mathematics, geometry, music, and astronomy, through which we can come to quantify the physical world. It is in observing with our five senses that we process this input using the trivium and quantify our reality using number in its many forms via the quadrivium as a measure of understanding. Morals and Dogma also brings to mind the Masonic credo on its front cover, Ordo ab Chao, or Order out of Chaos. Allegedly a metaphor illuminating us as to the source of Masonic power in their ability to create chaos out of which they can maintain control and assert order. Indeed, this is accurate, as learning is the process of establishing order out of chaos, or the method of transmuting chaos into order, using the three steps of the trivium, which we'll get to in the next section of this lesson. The method of transmuting order out of chaos is only quote-unquote evil if it is held by one side and used against the other, as this is the consequence of occulting useful tools of learning. By reintroducing these concepts to those who are not in secret societies and thus under no oaths of secrecy, we can effectively dissolve the power which the non-elected rulers use to assert their control over the lives of the masses, one mind at a time, without violating anyone's free will. What's more, the esoteric message of the symbols and words used by the perfectibilists, better known as the Illuminati, render even more interesting discoveries related to learning. The symbol of a triangle with an owl inside and a Latin inscription below translates to an epiphany regarding learning. The owl represents a predator who can see in the dark while you cannot, referring to the fact that those in the society can see the occulted information while you cannot. The triangle represents the Trinity, or the three-step process of systematic learning. And the quote, per me, caci vident, translates to, through me, the blind become sighted. It likewise refers to a process of learning, a process which, if not shared equally, can be used as a weapon, giving great power to the few, and used to control the many. If the word light is derived from the Latin word lux, L-U-X, might the process of shedding light be equated to the unocculting of information or the learning process of education? Might that which allows us to observe, compare reality to our memory, and learn as a result be something that people of the past might have worshipped? Might someone at some time in the past have sought to cloak the power of learning by making others, without access to the same tools of learning, think that it's evil or even an adversary, so as to use fear and nescience to prevent others from making meaningful discoveries and sharing knowledge with others outside of a secret society? That might start to account for the reason as to why our most precious natural resource, that of the ability for each individual to develop their mental capacity, has been most evidently subverted over past centuries. Now that we know that A, there is a method to learning anything, and B, that the method has been occulted and held as the primary secret of secret societies, because if they can prevent you from learning likewise, they have a favorable advantage in power differential, or leverage. Since much of the information we need to understand our history has been occulted, it is through the process of reading books whereby we can liberate our minds and exercise our freedom of speech and communication to better progress our understandings through a common language and interaction with others. This is the process by which we as individuals help each other to free our minds. Books are our best resource and knowledge into the history of humanity, and it's our ability to find and filter valuable information and share it with others which provides hope that all is not lost. All learning begins with an observation, and if our curiosity is healthy and hasn't been poisoned, for instance by the public education system, then our questioning of that observation leads us to learn our way forward by asking substantial questions and finding valid answers. Is there a relationship between the quality of our judgments or decisions and the quality of our lives? If you observe that there is a direct relationship between the quality of our judgments and the quality of our lives, then the question becomes, what is the method by which we can improve the quality of our judgments and decisions? As the inferred consequence would be an improvement in the quality of our lives. If somebody wanted to raise their standard of living at your expense, in the example of Bernie Madoff or any other con man, what might they have to do in order to be in a power position? Simply to undermine your ability to make quality decisions and accurate judgments. And this is done by occulting information, secrets which are protected by oaths, and other forms of coercion that benefit a small group and take advantage of a large group who's not in the know. If the status quo is fueled by our poor judgment, and simultaneously the status quo is in direct conflict with human needs for survival, might improving our ability to make quality decisions and accurate judgments not resolve the conflict ongoing? What is the biggest threat to the ruling class? Are they genetically superior, or have they just been provided with the tools to attain a higher level of perspective, thus making them our intellectual superiors through the occulting of information and the corruption of public education? Might the method by which one learns how to learn anything for one's self be the biggest secret? Is the world governed by people who are our intellectual inferiors? This question will be addressed throughout this lesson, so then let's ask a question which pertains to why we're all seeking intellectual self-defense. The question is, what creates an opportunity for a con man to take advantage of his prey? It is through the observation that knowledge exists, and the observation that occulting of information by one side creates an imbalance of power. This imbalance provides the opportunity for predators to create their own prey, to make slaves out of those who are not privy to the occulted or secret information. Whether it's a three-card Monte scheme or shell game in a city street or a Ponzi scheme being used to steal trillions of dollars from millions of people, those in the know who seek power through the occulting of information use this gap in knowledge to act as their fulcrum. And the more secrets, the greater their leverage. So the question becomes, how do you know if you're being fooled or if someone's trying to deceive you? Do you ever notice that sometimes honest people are providing information which is dishonest? Not as a function of their attempt to deceive you, but rather because they have not validated that which they are attempting to pass on to you as knowledge. How can we attain higher degrees of certainty by learning how to discern fact from fiction? And why weren't we taught this in school? We could start by defining what is meant by knowledge. It can be said that we live in a symbolic world, and all knowledge is a function of how communities of knowers construe and manipulate symbols. I think it's important to note that knowledge plays an important and critical role in communication, as does logic, the combination of which equates to something called rhetoric, which pertains to the expression of knowledge. And if this process is uncorrupted and remains in integrity with the law of identity, it is said to be factual and true. In other words, it exists in reality. It is through this knowledge, or the ability to construe and manipulate symbols, that rhetoric is formed. And this is the process by which the polymaths govern the rest of us. And in that realization, in that observation, one might recognize the concepts and characteristics which embody those who govern, as opposed to those who teach. All knowledge starts with observation through the five senses. This is the genesis of thinking as a process of identification to validate the contents which we store as memory. It has been said that judgment without observation is the epitome of ignorance, while observation without judgment is the epitome of wisdom. But why is observation without judgment so important? It is because in order to reach a point of decision or judgment, one has to think as a method to get there. And observation is not the end result of judgment, rather, it is the starting point for thinking to take place. What is thinking but an ongoing process of achieving accurate identification and the process of inferring these identifications into a body of logically connected knowledge? Thinking is simply the process of asking the questions who, what, when, where, why, and how. And knowing how to find valid answers to those questions, whereby you can then make an informed decision or accurate judgment. If your process of observation does not progress through the dialectic or question and answer process of thinking, your judgments reflect nothing other than conditioned responses programmed by your environment. And thus, you will not find your life to be satisfactory, as the status quo is created to facilitate progress and protect the non-elected ruling class, not you. What brings us all to this place of inquiry? Is it because we've all observed contradictions in our perspectives of reality, and therein these contradictions have sparked our curiosity and initiated us on a process of thinking, whereby we all seek to learn how to remove our misunderstandings about the world and communicate this newfound understanding to others? The root cause of what makes us aware that something is wrong is that we're comparing and contrasting that which we observe now to that which we have experienced in the past. We can all remember a time when we were availed greater degrees of liberty, and in comparing and contrasting the past to the present, we can sense a decline in our way of life. This comparison or contrast is the basis of the duality of our shared physical reality, and without contrast, there would be no way to discern one thing from another, which is the essence of unity or non-duality. It is a world without definition. Here in the physical world, we're all familiar with how corporations define and identify themselves with logos. In the ancient Greek language, the word logos, often translated as word or number, originally meant ratio. The Pythagoreans developed a theory of ratio and proportion as applied to numbers. Early translators rendered this into Latin as ratio, meaning reason, as in rational. Medieval writers used the word proportio, proportion, to indicate ratio, and proportionalitas, proportionality, for the equality of ratios. This is substantial because it is innate to the human species that we have the ability to form and use ratios, and thus to be rational. This is the key to what makes us human, our ability to recognize and use letters, thus building words, creating sentences, writing paragraphs, and sharing information beyond our lifetime. Just as one might build an entire city of bricks, there is an entire reality built from the building blocks of letters, words, and language. And we're all aware that all too often in history, words have been used to deceive others and to create invisible prisons to control people and enslave minds. Holocaust survivor Viktor Frankl is famous not for his being a survivor, but for the experiences which led him to an observation through which we can all come to understand the essence of what it means to be a human being. Quote, "Between stimulus and response, there is a space, and in that space is our freedom." End quote. To choose to think or not to think, to learn or not to learn, those are the questions we should be interested in. As human beings, we implicitly learn in a variety of ways, but we do this inconsistently and without accuracy or precision. It is in the explicit observation of how our natural ability to learn actually works, wherein is found the key to learning anything you want to learn in life. In fact, as we'll learn, there is really only one question we need to be asking, and it is by using this single word that we can unlock our own minds and truly begin to explore reality through a methodology of critical thinking and creative problem solving. That word, by the way, is what. And it helps if you put this little squiggly line with a dot below it, thus making it into a question. What is the identity of blank? Question mark. What is the process and purpose of thinking? Thinking is the process of identification. To employ metaphor, if you equate the process of learning to the process of eating, thinking is the part where you carefully identify what is and what is not food, so as not to poison yourself, as eating without thinking could lead you to consume something which is not food. Thinking is a tool of survival and is necessary to human beings who are volitional beings, meaning that there is a space to be filled in, and in that space, we make our choices. What is the process and purpose of thinking? Thinking is the process of identification. It starts when we question our observations and initiates a process by which we learn to answer our own questions. What is identity? It's the result of the process of elimination resulting in a non-contradictory label. If I describe a vehicle with wheels, you might say car. And if I add that it's pulled by a horse, you might say buggy. It is in observing the similarities and the differences that we define a concept, and once defined, we label it. This process of iterating the genera and differentia, or the similarities and the contrasts, allows one to see a concept in focus. Once a concept is clearly defined or labeled, it can then be further identified by asking who, what, where, when, why, and how. We all know these questions as the 5 W's plus how, questions which should be answered in any quality piece of journalism or academic writing. But in reality, there's only one question, as I mentioned, and it's asked in 6 different ways, all of which involve the word what. When ascertaining who, it translates as, what is the identity of the person involved? When ascertaining what, it translates as, what is the identity of the subject, concept, or topic involved? When ascertaining where, this translates as, what is the identity of the location or place? When ascertaining when, this translates as, what is the identity of the time? When ascertaining why, this translates as, what is the identity of the cause? And when ascertaining how, this translates as, what is the identity of the means or process? It is in asking the question, what is the identity of blank, that thinking takes place, as it is the process of grasping identification. And this is logic. Logic is the art of non-contradictory identification. When contradictory identification occurs, this is irrationality. This is the status quo. So if in asking the question what, we find the essence of human communication, and being that we've all been deprived of these methods, it's no wonder that we're all here looking for something. And now we can identify what that is. The concept of proof is the process of deriving a conclusion, step by step, from the directly given evidence of the senses, each step in accordance with the law of identity, which is logic. Once concepts are mutually defined, communication becomes much more efficient and effective. It therefore is no wonder why these concepts might be alien to all of us. In taking them away, it debilitates our ability to communicate with each other. Logic is the art of non-contradictory identification, meaning that one thing cannot be another thing at the same time and in the same respect. In essence, any agreed-upon definition therefore acts as a common ground for successful communication to commence. If you are attempting to communicate with someone and cannot agree on common definitions, communication cannot take place. You're speaking two different languages. If identities cannot be defined and logic is not present, the conversation is apparently about nothing. If you encounter a failure to communicate, it is likely that there's a contradiction in identification, whereby reaffirming mutual agreement on definitions or identification will most likely remedy the situation. This concept becomes very useful in conflict resolution situations. What we're talking about is the common thread between humans and computers, that being logic. And this is why we can use computers and other electronic instruments to communicate with each other. The way I'm communicating with you right now is identical to how computers communicate with each other. In a technological sense, we all speak in code. And if you have the decoder, in this case, English, you can understand what I'm saying, even if you have to look up a couple words. A code is defined as communication between an encoder, a writer or speaker, that's me, and a decoder, a reader or listener, that's you. And using the agreed-upon symbols, in this case the English alphabet and English dictionary, we can communicate. In 1948, Claude Shannon, an American polymath, published his paper on the mathematical theory of communication, which earned him a place in history as the father of information theory. Shannon's research in how communication works is the foundation principle for the electronic age, as it is used in computers and practically every other type of communication device or electronic gadget known to man. It is in recognizing the input, processing, and output pattern of these communication systems that we can learn how our own process of communication has been undermined. You have an idea, you express it, and the person to whom you're speaking looks as if your message has been lost in translation. If you agree on definitions, i.e. the coded language used to transmit the message, whether English or binary code, the next step would be to identify the source of noise in the message, specifically identifying that which is message and that which is not. This is the logical processing. You're discerning fact from fiction, that which is message and that which is not. Noise in this system diagram might be equated to propaganda in the news media. You have to filter it out. Humans and computers differ insofar as humans sometimes attempt to deceive each other and/or communicate information which has not been validated. Both instances create chaos or noise, which can dissolve the integrity of the message. A fallacy is an error in our logical thinking process. The word fallacy derives from the Latin fallere, to deceive. If somebody is nescient in the myriad of fallacies in existence, their use, if recognized by you, might be construed as innocent. If someone's knowledgeable and is attempting to deceive you by using fallacies, if recognized by you, can be addressed, and you can avoid taking toxic misinformation and filing it in your memory as truth. However, when so much information is held secret and so many fables are therefore circulated as truth, it's hard to achieve a clear focus on reality. Thinking is the process of bringing our mind into focus on the subject or concept to be identified. So what would happen if the properties of identification are withheld from you? You become the external enemy in this diagram, the profane public, the exoteric masses who are left blind and in the dark. This is the nature of encryption and cryptography, a type of occulting of information, which Claude Shannon also miraculously elaborated in simplest terms in 1949. Shannon created what is called the Communication of Secrecy Systems method, which occults information, in this diagram the key source, denying someone outside of the secret society the ability to read the messages. This is useful to understand as it is access to this key which enables the rest of us to decrypt our reality. The occulting of information is the encryption of our reality, and this will enable you to see some of the understandings related in films like The Matrix. If the world has been pulled over our eyes, then education is the process of getting back to reality. In ancient Hindu, Ram is a word for God. Today in the 21st century, it refers to memory. Might these concepts be connected? This diagram illustrates the similarities and differences between you and your computer. And it's titled, Your Computer and You. And I thought that it might help you get more out of this lesson. So let's see. It's likely that we all have a computer. And like we just learned from Claude Shannon, there are three basic steps to making it useful. Input, processing, and output. This cycle, repeated consistently, makes it a useful tool. Your computer, in simplest terms, is a code or operating system which runs on a chip made of sand and stored as memory as polarized rust on a disk. And it might cost you a few $1,000s. You might connect your computer to the internet, which is an input. You might then have a firewall, virus scan, and spam filter in place before you let your processor get to the processing work, and eventually store it to memory where it can be recalled and output to a printer, disk, or sent back out through the internet as communication. And if all these pieces work synergistically, the computer is therefore useful and generates satisfaction and serenity in your life, and if not, it causes frustration and confusion. Now, as likely as it is that you have a computer, it's even more likely that you have a brain. And like we just learned from Claude Shannon, there are three basic steps to making it useful. Input, processing, and output. This cycle, when likewise repeated consistently, makes our mind a useful tool. Your mind, in simplest terms, is the operating system of the brain, which is the most complex organism in the known physical universe and is priceless and irreplaceable. Your body literally can't leave home without it. You might have access to all five of your senses to observe and interact with the environment, and this is your input. You then might have a firewall, an awareness to the observation that predators do exist. You might have a virus scan, which is the awareness to the fact that information lacking integrity can disrupt your ability to think and act. You might also have a spam filter, which is an awareness that some predators use false identities in an attempt to deceive you and take from you. Through the use of logical processing, asking the 5 W's plus how, these contradictions can be identified, thus allowing you to avoid the confidence scheme, as it only works if you're intellectually self-defenseless. At this point, you might store this validated information in memory where it can be recalled by you and output by thinking, talking, or doing something. And if all these pieces work synergistically, the mind is useful and generates satisfaction and serenity. And if not, it causes frustration and confusion in our lives. So the question is, given this information, why do we all seem to invest more in our computers than we do in understanding and protecting the workings of our own minds? It seems we've been fooled into misprioritizing what is most precious and sold on a systematic form of undermining our own right of self-determination through some very clever marketing, thanks to a few egocentric polymaths. When we fail to exercise our choice and ask these questions, to think or not to think, we become our own oppressors. And this is by design in the status quo. What's more, what happens if we don't have a firewall, virus scan, and spam filter running at all times in our mind? We lose our choice, as it is in these three steps wherein we evaluate and assert our decisions. It is in the turning off of our awareness through the false creation or attribution of trust in these so-called authorities, whereby we become controlled, literally. For it is in the output where the propaganda and deception enter into our mind and lays without questioning, where we store it as factual truth in memory. This is the corruption. Our choice is self-usurped, and then our thinking is outsourced to whatever input we are exposed to because we have lost the curiosity to ask the question, what? And the discipline to ask it in six different ways consistently, and thereby we have lost our free will. You are free only when you understand yourself in relationship to your surroundings, and this changes as you move through the world. So if you don't have the tools to deal with the unknown in a systematic manner, this would create constant confusion, frustration, and fear in your life. However, the common thread which creates the fabric of knowledge is the observation that learning is the path to freedom. And it all starts with asking the question, what? Referring back to the communication systems theory, this is the key to unlocking our own minds, to decrypting our reality, enabling us to take actions which inspire others to do likewise. War has both mental and physical characteristics, and there can be no support for physical warfare if there is not first mental support which facilitates the physical action. To defeat your enemy, you must break their will to control you. In order to break their will, you must break their ability to control your mind. It is only when information is occulted that the appearance of truth can be disfigured, and it is in this intellectual corruption whereby human beings can be tricked into dehumanizing, and thus rationalizing the use of aggression, fraud, and coercion against other human beings and their communities. The buck stops here. Allow me to introduce the turning point in this story by reflecting some wisdom which helped lead all of us here today. Excerpted from a lecture by famed mystery writer and Oxford graduate, Dorothy Sayers, in her lecture, The Lost Tools of Learning. Quote, "I'm not here to consider the feelings of academic bodies. I am concerned only with the proper training of the mind to encounter and deal with the formidable mass of undigested problems presented to it by the modern world. For the tools of learning are the same in any and every subject, and the person who knows how to use them will, at any age, get the mastery of a new subject or topic in half the time and with a quarter of the effort expended by the person who has not these tools at his command. To learn six subjects without remembering how they were learnt does nothing to ease the approach to a seventh subject. To have learnt and remembered the art of learning makes the approach to every subject an open door." End quote. And that's why this is a key. because it allows you to open any and every door in this crazy theme park called Earth. So here's where this lesson pays off. We are all standing on top of the single most powerful learning methodology, which produces progress with ever-increasing degrees of certainty. But first, there's one more word to learn. Trivium. It's Latin for where three roads meet. What three roads? The input, the processing, and the output, which when used in a systematic, ordered repetition, produces satisfaction. And at this point, I'm going to have you elevate your own sense of perspective, thereby transmuting your natural, implicit ability to learn into an explicit form of intellectual self-defense. Step one, the input. This is how to observe. This is simply the defined knowledge resulting from answering who, what, where, and when. This input or knowledge is referred to as the general grammar of a concept or idea. General grammar is the connecting of human word concepts to objective reality. Step two, the processing. This is how to think. This is simply the understanding which results from answering the question, why? Or non-contradictory identification. This processing, or thinking, is referred to as logic. Step three, the output, how to communicate. This is simply the communication of knowledge and understanding, which is wisdom, which precipitates from answering the question, how? It is in taking the grammar and applying logic that creates what is referred to as rhetoric, or the expression of wisdom. However, if an audience lacks intellectual self-defense and does not question the rhetoric they can soon be misled. This is why it's imperative that we the people become skilled in the art of using this three-step process, known as the Trivium method of critical thinking and creative problem solving. Whether referred to as input, processing, and output, or how to observe, how to think, how to communicate, or knowledge, understanding, and wisdom, or grammar, logic, and rhetoric, it's all referring to the identical, implicit, and natural three-step process that we have used as human beings throughout history. This is why the explicit teaching of this has been removed from public education systems around the world and has been preserved within the elite universities, mystery schools, and secret societies. It is the single secret which allows them to create and maintain power in the first place by amputating our curiosity and ability to learn anything for ourselves, making us dependent on teachers in Pavlovian classrooms using Wundtian implementations of experimental psychology to condition us like Skinner's pigeons, where we can read just enough to be efficiently and effectively controlled. B.F. Skinner deprived his pigeons of food, and then used food to corrupt the actions of the pigeons. And our non-elected rulers deprive us of information and money, and then use these deficiencies to corrupt our actions and decisions to be in their favor. This is the root cause of why the status quo is in direct conflict with human needs for survival. This is why the 15,000 hours you spent in public school did not teach you what you've just learned within this hour lesson. It is the most important thing that we can be taught, and yet it is conspicuously absent from our status quo in our public education system. But that shouldn't surprise us at this point. Now, a couple of quick examples to give you the best grip possible on this invaluable set of perspectives. Example 1. If you've ever been out of your neighborhood and gotten hungry, it's likely you've had the experience of ordering from an unfamiliar restaurant. Therein, you would observe the menu, think about what you'd like, and then you would order and eat your meal. These three steps, observe, think, order, have to go in that order. You don't eat and then order, then think about what you want, and then look at the menu. That would be illogical. Grammar consists of the definitions or knowledge of what's on the menu. Logic is the process of thinking, comparing what you like to the menu, and assuring you don't eat any contradiction which brings you dissatisfaction. Rhetoric is the process of ordering and eating the meal. The same three-step process can be used to deal with any unknown situation and learn your way forward. Example 2. It seems that almost every television channel has a police crime scene investigation show, and yet, ironically, too few in this world can actually recognize, investigate, and solve any of the myriad of mega crimes going on in this grand theft world, ongoing. In these shows, the grammar, logic, and rhetoric process is the repetitive yet implicit theme. The system or method by which the crimes are all solved, ironically enough. First, there is an awareness and definition of the crime scene, which then goes back to the lab and they go through the evidence and identify and remove contradictions, whereby the connection to the criminal having been made, they can do the arrest and end the show. Grammar, logic, rhetoric, in a wheel of power, which the helmsmen of this world use to steer the rest of us through life. This three-step process is the essence of how to start to instantly introduce equilibrium into the world, one free mind at a time. Lastly, if you haven't got the hang of it yet, one more example to get you started. Everyone here has purchased a product which comes with an instruction manual. And every single instruction manual, with its integrity intact, uses grammar, logic, and rhetoric in the three-step process called the trivium method. And that's because they wish to succinctly communicate the value of their concept or idea or product. The individual parts are always listed first, defined, and usually illustrated. This is the general grammar of that product. Next, the instruction manual will show you how all these parts fit together, usually illustrating how the knowledge of the individual parts interconnect with each other. This produces your understanding and thus allowing you successful assembly. This is the logic aspect of the manual. Lastly, the instruction manual articulates how to properly use and troubleshoot the product, and this is the rhetoric. The entire manual is its rhetoric because that's where it's sharing its knowledge. Now, picture a circle divided into three equal parts. These lines of division are the three roads of the trivium: grammar, logic, and rhetoric. When used in that specific order, repetitively, with active learning engaged, produces increasing degrees of certainty as your skills improve. If you rotate this circle and progress it horizontally, it creates a line of repeating steps: grammar, logic, rhetoric, grammar, logic, rhetoric. And this is a comprehensive decision-making process. It is the process used to deceive all of us into locking our own minds early in life and being deprived of this simple natural reflection of the human learning process. We were conditioned to accept whatever feels emotionally pleasant as truth. And that, if you'll excuse the pun, does not compute. Critical thinking cannot be taught effectively as a curriculum, as it is a skill which results from the process and practice of thinking and learning. And it's driven by the grammar, logic, and rhetoric, this cycle of observation, thought, and action. The purpose of grammar is to bring initial and consistent order to a body of knowledge. It's the definitions. It's the identity. The purpose of logic is to extract understanding from that body of knowledge, seeing how it's interconnected. And rhetoric is the cogent explanation of that body of knowledge and logic. And if done effectively, this is known as teaching. Occulting information is the opposite of teaching. When one realizes that they desire to change their environment, either as recognition of a problem in need of a solution or an inspiration to create a new improvement in the world, the learning process is necessary. This is why this use of our five senses being processed by the trivium and integrated into our comprehension of physical reality using the quadrivium is embodied in the famous 5-3-4 triangle of Pythagoras and is one of the highest secrets in Masonry. One of the requirements to enter Plato's Academy was, quote-unquote, knowledge of geometry, which refers to Pythagoras, of course, and the fact that if you don't know how to learn anything for yourself by asking substantial questions and obtaining valid answers, you cannot possibly contribute to or benefit from a school which operates on the prerequisite of autonomy or self-governance, as Plato's Academy did. In ancient times, students were taught the trivium at home by their parents as a prerequisite for admission into the universities. Now you know why the secret societies, including the Brother Masons and the Illuminati, conceal this secret from the public. because any single person who understands what I'm saying or can learn to understand what I'm saying now has the potential to learn to use these skills and become impervious to the control system. This learning process is a vaccination of information, inoculating you from predatory forces on this planet, specifically from those who use knowledge of how your mind works to undermine your thoughts, feelings, and actions. The hope exists in the simple fact that you can hear me, that you can work to grasp my meaning, and that with a little thinking, we can all begin to reflect the change that we wish to see in the world, and thereby make this convergence of will a success, long into the future. Albert Einstein observed that problems cannot be solved at the same level of consciousness which creates them. And in my humble opinion, where learning exists, therein is proof of God. And if we define God as the process of learning, that statement would then be true. If one equated God to the concept or process of learning, one might note that in places where learning is stifled and information is censored, it is as if God has abandoned the area and conflict festers on as more and more information is censored. On the contrary, where people are engaged in kinetic learning coupled with constructive action and compassionate communication, it is as if God is manifesting through their actions as they learn to teach and help each other survive and thrive in this world. Indeed, there is a connection between the concepts of energy, nature, learning, freedom, love, and God. But that is the destination of your own journey of understanding, and I will not attempt to deny you that priceless experience of self-recognition. Rather, I'm here to fan the flame of your curiosity. Your true teacher is your curiosity. And I'm just here to help ensure that you reach your destination sooner rather than later. Would you like to know more? First off, we have Jan Ervin's interviews with Gene O'Denning, Gnostic Media Podcast episodes 49, 50, and 51. Next up, we have TriviumEducation.com, which has all the information contained in Gnostic Media Podcast episodes 49, 50, and 51, all organized on a single webpage. Next would be the Peace Revolution episodes 1, 2, 3. The entire podcast is dedicated to a comprehensive or full spectrum education. And if you're hearing this, you might even be listening to it right now. The next resource would be the Tragedy and Hope online community, wherein there is a Trivium study group, an Introduction to Logic study group, and there is an upcoming Philosophical Corruption of Physics study group. Last but not least is our video series, What You've Been Missing. Episodes 1 and 2 focus on the noble lie and the history of corruption in public education, and I encourage you to check them out if that sounds interesting. In closing, I would observe that literacy is a form of slavery until a systematic form of critical thinking is practiced by the reader. Now you've been informed as to the awareness of the existence of this process, and you've been provided with the coordinates of where to locate more information on these topics should you be interested. And this is where we now invite you to participate with thousands of people all over the world by reviewing our podcasts, screening our films, and sharpening your intellectual self-defense skills in our online community. It was my responsibility to provide you with information which you could, upon leaving, use to your advantage. And that's what makes it valuable. If this lesson taught you nothing, then you have been entertained and not informed. I encourage you to familiarize yourself with the concepts unfolded through this lesson today and do some serious thinking on your own. And therein you'll realize that you too can learn to use this superpower which is innate to all human beings. The proof exists. As if it weren't possible for any one of us to change the game, then billions of dollars would not be invested into dumbing down the world population. The future is a function of your decisions. When you learn to choose wisely, every decision becomes a rewarding experience. If we are to survive as human beings and a human species, we must learn to be excellent to each other. Peace.